Come on.
Come on.
Come on.
Come on.
Come on.
Mine doesn't do it.
Oh, he's too much of a man.
Put some ice cubes in that thing.
You drink it however you want, man. I've been a big proponent of drink what you like. Unless you like screwball. If you like screwball, then fuck you.
Yeah. All right, guys. Welcome to Scotch and Splenda, the podcast that tastes like The Office, but gets you drunk like Jan must have been after visiting the Scranton branch in season one. Here at Scotch and Splenda, we're talking about everything The Office, but most importantly, theories, side stories, and what ifs. We are your co-regional managers, as always. I'm AJ.
I'm BJ.
And I'm Nick.
On this episode, we're talking all about specifically first season Michael Scott.
Boo.
Boo. Boo this man. Boo. But first, we got to give a very quick reminder that while you are here listening to the show, please leave us a five-star review and make sure that while you're doing that, you're also dropping your favorite fan theory that's just been rattling around in your brain like some sort of Creed thought, nice. So that way we can read it out here on the show, okay?
Even for the internet.
Even for the internet. It's pretty shocking.
It's pretty shocking.
So, yeah, make sure you guys submit those so we can read them here on the show like we're about to do.
All right, so you know the routine. Every episode, we plan on getting one of our listeners' fan theories involved to start each episode. So, Nick, you got the fan theory this week. What do you got?
I sure
tell
do.
Us, tell us.
So, this fan theory comes from our buddy Riker Garrison. Thank you for the submission, Riker.
Oh, yeah.
And it is the theory that Bob Vance is connected to some level of organized crime or the mob.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Sure he
is. Oh, I like this.
Bob Vance of Vance Refrigeration, question mark?
Yep. Well, you know what?
Bob Vance of the five families.
Of the five families, yes. There's a lot of evidence to support this theory.
Absolutely.
I think we discuss. So I got a question, or not so much a question, but a backup to this a little bit is, and I was going to go right for the five families.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yep.
So in that episode, Chair Model, when they call the meeting of the five families,
right?
Did you notice when you walk in the room that Bob Vance is at the head of the table?
Oh, good call.
Okay.
Nice. All right.
No, I did
That's
not.
That's a nice note there. I did not
He's
realize
sitting at
that.
The head of the table and they are flanking him.
Oh, wow.
So any mob boss would sit at the head of the table.
You're absolutely
so,
right.
I mean, anyway.
He has kind of a history of violence, if you will, with, you know, when Phyllis and Bob go out. She likes to wear something low cut, she says.
Get guys to flirt with her a little bit. Yeah. And then Bob beats him up.
So he's got no problem there with his history of violence. And I mean, I don't know. What else we got on this?
Okay, here's another one.
Yeah.
He's only ever available from 2:30 to 3:15.
How hectic schedule.
How hectic can a refrigerator guy's schedule be that he's got 45 minutes a day available? So I don't know. That's another one.
That's a good point.
What do you think, Nick?
I definitely feel like Bob Vance is some level of absolute shit old dirtbag.
Yeah.
Like he just is. There's instances where he like Phyllis, I know at one point threatened somebody, don't make me get Bob involved.
Yeah. What's Bob going to do? Never mind. I shouldn't have said anything.
Exactly. Okay. That's exactly right. It's that sort of thing that, really makes you feel that maybe he's a little more dangerous than your average bear.
Yeah. Absolutely, man.
Okay. Okay. Here's another one.
Okay.
Hit me.
Bob and Phyllis's wedding.
Right.
When they're going through the procession line and Michael says, if you ever lay a finger on Phyllis, I'll kill you.
I'll kill you.
And Bob Vance does not let go of his hand while shaking it and says, if you ever lay a hand on Phyllis, I'll kill you, with a smile on his face.
That's right.
He's obviously killed.
Yeah.
For less, probably.
More than likely. I would have to agree with that.
Yeah.
I mean, he's pretty forceful in the way that he manhandles that microphone away out of there and then just sort of shirt collars Michael out of the scene when he's trying to do his speech.
Oh, yeah.
During the reception as well.
Yep.
Okay. Oh, man. I think this is solid. So I think we should. Is this a consensus? Do we feel like this exists in the Scotch and Splenda ethos of canon Office?
I say yes.
Yes.
I say yes.
I say yes as well.
That's three yeses. Okay, it is official. Bob Vance of Vance Refrigeration is involved in some sort of organized crime.
Crime syndicate, yeah, mafia.
We'll call him mafia, mob boss.
Yeah.
He's 2 hours away from New York.
Right.
Maybe Scranton's where he hangs low, lays low.
He has a striking resemblance to the insurance guy.
Angelo Grotti.
Angelo Grotti.
Yeah, Grotti. I think
maybe he sent Angelo Grotti in to keep an eye on Michael. So one of your other theories that I guess could be sort of like a branch off of this one is that Bob Vance and Vance Refrigeration are also a front for mafia.
Absolutely it is.
Which is why Bob Vance is so intent on every time he's in front of the cameras.
Yeah.
Bob Vance of Vance Refrigeration.
Yeah. Name me one other person in the world that repeats their occupation after they introduce themselves on camera.
Yeah.
Like that.
What line are you working, Bob? What line of work are you in, Bob? By the way, we definitely know that those refrigerator boxes are more than suitable for the size of a body because Andy falls through into one and it perfectly envelopes him.
Yep.
That's body, like getting rid of bodies. It all makes sense,
man. And guess what? When you're getting rid of bodies, what do you got to do? Keep them cold.
Oh my God.
We just cracked this. We are wide the fuck open.
Oh, Riker, thank you for that submission. I think you got 3 out of 3 on us believing that. That is official.
That is golden.
All right. I think it's time to get into the meat of the episode.
Meat of the episode.
Yep, so we're going to talk season 1, Michael. But before we get into any episode, we need something to wet our whistle here.
A little cheers
to be had here. So Nick brought us a nice little bourbon today. Tell us what we're drinking.
Yes. So today we're just drinking it's a Buffalo Trace single barrel store pick. So this one comes courtesy of our Oakland Road Hy-Vee up in Cedar Rapids, which is near us. Buffalo Trace is just there. So Buffalo Trace Distillery in Frankfort, Kentucky, this is kind of their flagship offering. It's not an age-stated bourbon. It's not anything with a ton of rye content or anything like that. It's just an easy drinking, generally fairly easy to get a hold of bottle of booze.
Well, I'll be the judge on the easy drinking.
Yeah,
it's probably what $26-$27 a bottle, somewhere
under
in the neighborhood.
Yep.
Yeah, it's pretty great bang for your buck.
It's always a pretty coveted bottle, you know, and it's just fan. It's great.
It's a good one
to
have at the little home bar.
Yep, it just should be in every home bar.
Okay.
In America.
Gotcha.
All right, give it a try there, AJ. Tell us what you think.
I've had a little sipski. Clinky.
Clinky, clinky.
Clinky, clinky.
Come on.
Maybe I should start figuring out like how many Splendas it would take for me to get it down.
lose your man card or what?
Yeah. You know me, guys.
Zero Splendas.
Zero Splendas.
AJ's rating scale will be what flavor of White Claw does he need to chase
This might be a watermelon. No, I'm just kidding.
No, this is actually really good. I think I would only chase this with a Pamplemousse LaCroix.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Ooh, yes, indeed. No, it's good. I can get it down pretty easy. I got my 2 ice cubes.
That's what she said.
Yeah, you got it.
Yeah. All right. Well, office talking juice.
Office talking juice, Scotch and Splenda. Let's go. First season, Michael Scott.
Boo.
General consensus.
One boo was not enough.
Yeah.
Okay. How about Nick? Kick us off on this.
Season 1, Michael sucks. He is the epitome of sitcom cringe humor.
Like from the hair plugs to the pleated pants.
He's a walking Bosley infomercial. So he just is, like, in this entire first season. You catch him from the right angle and you're just like, Jesus Christ, you can see all the way to the back of his head through that.
It's like he saran wrapped his head to keep his hair intact.
He goes out of his way to be as inappropriate and uncomfortable and unprofessional as possible.
Yeah. And he also does everything that they probably ask everyone not to do is, hey, we're just coming in here. This is a documentary. The Office is supposed to be a documentary. And they're saying, guys, just go about your normal day. Just kind of pretend we're not here. You know, we're here to kind of see what you guys do and just kind of get the feel of what the normal day is for you. And then first thing when the cameras flip on, hey guys, I'm Michael Scott and let's walk you through the office. He's just playing everything up to just be the most obnoxious and just always looking at the camera, always looking for approval from the camera.
Yeah, this is his shot. This is his shot. This is 15 minutes. He's in. This is everything he's ever wanted, an audience for his terrible, racist sense of humor. I think we all know the pilot episode kind of was almost a shot-for-shot remake of what the pilot kind of was for the UK. Yeah. And that's what they were told to do and they had to do. And it wasn't until Diversity Day that they kind of start, you know, writing their own scripts. Greg Daniels once said that Diversity Day was really the pilot of The Office. That was the first episode that they could write and they could have control.
They kind of got free reign on.
This was their pilot, whereas the actual pilot was just shot for shot remake.
Just David Brent.
David Brent.
It was David Brent all over again.
Ricky Gervais, Stephen Merchant's original creation. If you go back and watch the UK Office, shot for shot.
Yep. And I think, you know, that was part of the problem was getting away from the UK because I truly think Americans have a different sense of humor. They have, they look for different things in comedy. I think UK is like a darker humor. It's a little more
dry.
Yep. And, you know, we needed a little bit more emotion. We needed an emotional attachment to our lead character. And Michael did not have that. You couldn't relate to him in season one. No one could relate to season one, Michael. And if you could, you're not a good person. So.
Wonderful observation, BJ. No,
you relate to season one, Michael, you get the fuck out.
We don't even want you here listening to this podcast. It's very true, though. I mean, and that's kind of the point because Ricky Gervais stated like the whole point, and to be fair, so much of the first season was meant to be based off the idea of the UK. It's much more dry. It's much more monotone, like you're saying. And David Brent of UK Office was not supposed to be likable. He wasn't in it for the long haul. That show was meant to be two seasons.
Correct.
You know, it was written to be two seasons. And they realized that once The Office started getting its like fandom and start really growing, that they're like, we can't have him be this shitbag, like you said, right? Yeah. And so they're like, okay, not only can we have to transform his personality or him physically, but we also have to transform his personality.
Yeah. Well, the physical change was nice for everyone. Yeah. Not to look at the hair plugs. He got a hair transplant.
That's right.
In between seasons. Yep. And you know, I think that was fine. That's an actor doing the right thing for an actor's career, right?
Yeah.
And then he also lost a ton of weight because he was getting ready to do 40 Old Virgin.
That's right.
And so he looks way different from season one to even season two. But I think even more than that, just the character development from season two on makes him much more relatable and likable.
Right. Well, let's start off at number two, Diversity Day. Episode two, Diversity Day. And we get to meet like Larry Wilmore, who plays Mr. Brown.
And he's not going to call him that.
Nope.
He's
not his first time.
you get those kind of jokes, and the whole reason that there's a person coming in this stature that he needs these signatures to understand, like, hey, there's certain things that are okay in the office and not. It's all because
of Michael.
Riffing on a Chris Rock bit.
Just reciting word for word, including some words he's definitely not allowed
that
to
you
say.
Should not be saying in any context.
Big oofs. Big oofs.
And you're just like this is, he just can't help himself. He just can't, the man can't help himself. And oh man, his back and forth with Larry Wilmore, I think is some of the best. Larry Wilmore, by the way, continued to be like a producer and executive input and like kind of that input throughout The Office, by the way.
He makes a quick return in season three, episode one.
He does.
Gay Witch Hunt.
Witch Hunt, that's right.
Yep, over at the Stanford branch.
The Stanford branch.
Oh, we're having more problems at the Stanford branch. So.
Or at the Scranton branch.
Scranton branch, so.
Larry Wilmore has this great bit in Diversity Day where he very much treats Michael like the rowdy little kid that he's trying to get things back on track. He goes, Michael, I would love to have your permission to run this meeting. Can I have your permission to do that?
Yeah.
And he's like, yes.
Yeah.
He says, great. I would also help me if you were seated.
Yeah. it's like middle management 101 on how you deal with your subordinates. It's just like, And Michael's like, he's not even like, he has no idea that it's, no. he's being, he, this is being done to him. Yeah. his awareness, his self-awareness is just, is non-existent.
No, not at all.
Right? Yeah. So.
Just, and you go through every episode, and season one just, it doesn't really progress. Like I said, there's like a hard line in the sand in one and two.
Because
even look at basketball, the second to last episode, yeah. where he's going nuts on the court, and he's still that guy.
He's incredibly one-dimensional
yes.
yeah. in season one. Incredibly one-dimensional.
Yes. And then you got to ask yourself, like, how did he not get fired? Like, in America.
Okay, yeah.
yeah. Yeah. Even in, you know, the early 2000s, like, in the inappropriate behavior and oh, the man. Things that are said.
Yeah.
And the, I mean, it's just, you have to ask yourself why. And I think that's why they obviously progress his character, because you would.
There's no way he would have stuck around in this.
I mean, yeah. I mean, you think it's like almost 20 years ago, right?
Yeah.
That's when, you know, it aired. We're creeping up on a 20-year. And it's still back then, like, it was just not okay to act like that.
No.
which yeah. which is, it's a comedy, I get it, but it's, you know, you want to feel like it's a documentary, and you're watching it, and you're like, this is unbelievable.
This can't be real.
So they go on, obviously, later in the series to show Michael's extraordinary sales ability and stuff, like The Client, which is oh, yeah. your favorite episode.
One of my, yeah, absolute yes. favorites.
But not till season two.
Right. They tease it a little bit right at the very beginning of season one, like in the first episode,
right.
where he's calling the library and manages to lock down the sale,
yeah.
but then still manages to fuck it up. And he's like, thank you, sir. You are a gentleman and a scholar. Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, thank you. And then hangs up and goes, that was a woman.
Goes, that a really deep voice.
Yeah, must have been a smoker.
Must have been a smoker. Oh, yeah. Man, it's so bad. He tries so hard to be, again, just likable in, honestly, anyone's eyes. Anyone yeah. who he can gain the attention of.
Well, and to speak even a little bit more to what you were talking about earlier with, like, how he's very much not respecting the documentary format of
yeah.
the whole thing being sort of a go about your normal business right. and we're just third-party observers.
Right.
He does. He walks them through the entire office like it's a fucking episode of, like, MTV Cribs. He's like, this is Pam. Yeah. If you think she's cute now, you should have seen her a few years ago. Just,
what? Like, yeah.
yeah. He was like one section short of walking to his own office and going, and this is where the magic happens.
You're absolutely right.
How about the scene of the fake firing of Pam?
Oh my god.
Can we talk about the cringe? And also, like, Pam's character progression after that, because that wouldn't have happened in season 3 and 4 and 5
no,
and beyond.
No,
you know,
no
it just wouldn't have happened.
No.
That was a season one only, and that was one of Jenna Fisher's, like, audition scenes that she had
god.
To do that got her the role for that. And yeah. to just be in that situation with your man, and then the best is Brian. He's part of it. He's my accomplice.
Yeah. Shaking his
he's just
head
like,
slowly.
He's like, I can't believe I'm here and a part of this. Like, I can't believe this. Like, he's just ashamed to just be in the room.
So I read a pretty fun theory on The Office. And
okay.
I think it was kind of directed towards season one. But it's David Brent
mm-hmm.
is Michael Scott. So Michael Scott is David Brent, and the theory is that after David Brent was fired from his UK office in Warnham and Hogg or whatever it's called, he kind of writes a story of how his office career went. And so season one was okay. him at Warnham and Hogg, and then he writes the rest of the episodes as how he wished it would have gone. Because at the end of it, Michael Scott ends with the, you know, he fell in love with the love of his life.
Okay.
He had the love of all of his employees, and he's running the most successful branch when he leaves the show. And that was David Brent's dream, and he never could do it in the UK.
That's a great theory. It's a great thing to think about. Like,
yeah. It's almost just your unreliable narrator concept or whatever. It's just him kind of explaining what he thinks should have happened or
yeah.
embellishing on.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like it
That's
starts,
interesting for sure.
It starts bad, just like it was at the first office, and then he grows, and then by the end of him, you know, leaving, and the his cap on the story is, you know, I won. I was the most successful.
Because you can almost see it happening as he goes through and does things like, has a relationship with Donna, which is having an affair, and then corrects back. Like, he started to tell the story and how awesome it was, and then read the room and was like, oh, shit, they're not into this. Yeah, all right, let's go.
Well, there's also the great point of the fact that there's really no reason Michael's branch should be doing so well. So no. he couldn't write an explanation
right
as to why he's actually doing so well.
Like it's when just, David Wallace sits him down is. And asks yes. why, what are you doing right? Let's say we order some pasta.
Never do.
Let's say we do.
Let's say we do.
To anyone for any reason.
Ever. For no matter what.
No matter
where, no matter who,
yeah,
ever.
See? Sometimes I just start a sentence and I don't even know where it's going.
So the theory would be that David Brent was writing why and how he became successful and he didn't even know.
I do like that.
Okay, we don't have to vote on that. I just thought that was a fun one I came across.
Fair enough.
On the interwebs.
Yeah.
All right, so we've talked about some stuff that we like, some stuff that we don't like about Michael, but let's...
A lot of stuff we don't like.
A lot of stuff we don't like. Let's put it in.
Was
concrete.
There anything
let's
that we liked?
We're gonna get there.
No. Yeah, okay, fine, right. Fine.
Let's talk about some of the stuff that we liked, some of the stuff that we didn't like, and let's just put it in concrete. Let's talk. What's your favorite part about season one, Michael? What was your least favorite moment or part about season one, Michael?
Oof, I'll go last. I'm gonna have to really think about what I liked.
Okay.
AJ, okay. Why don't you go first?
I will say this is the first thing that came to mind for something that I like was probably in Hot Girl. I think that's the episode, right? It's called Hot Girl.
Season finale.
Season finale.
Amy Adams.
And for some reason, God, I don't even know if I can say I like it. I just like kind of like that it happened to him. I just like that he kind of got shut down.
Yeah.
Like... He kind of got his own hopes up there in like I'm giving her a ride home, and like Dwight's like asking him. He's just riding high on this.
Yeah,
he's really riding high on the fact that he's gonna give the girl, the purse girl, a ride home, and then sure enough, as they're walking out, he's saying and like it's like, oh, you're gonna ride home with us, or like he's like, oh no, Jim was gonna actually take me home, we're gonna go get a drink, and then he was gonna take me home, so you're off the hook. And he's just like, okay.
Defeated.
Okay. Yeah. And he goes on, and it's just like, oh man, all of his prep work and everything that happened, it's like it's the most deserving finish, I think, to season one. Like, he's having Ryan help clean out his car for a special assignment.
Which is such a great scene.
Yeah. Jeez, how many filet of fishes did you eat?
It's over several months, Ryan.
Still.
That's my Drakkar Noir. No, it says right aid night sweat.
It's a perfect smell alike.
I'm not paying for the label.
I'm still in the tube.
Still some of the straw. Wiping it across his neck.
No, what flavor is it? Blue. No, blue's not a flavor, Ryan. No, it says Blue Blast. Oh, Blue Blast. Oh, yeah, Blue Blast.
Put that in the trunk.
Wonderful, wonderful writing and jokes that are happening in this whole scene. And like, again, it's just all this nice build up to just Michael thinking he's got this shot.
Yeah.
With and knowing and then seeing him just get destroyed was definitely a highlight for me.
Okay.
So
that's good.
That's a positive.
You know why? Because it showed a redeeming human character of Michael.
That's a good point.
And that's, I think, what everyone was looking for.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So what was your least favorite?
Least favorite thing with Michael?
Yeah. Worst season one Michael moment for you.
The worst season.
It doesn't have to be objectively his worst, but what was the worst for you?
The worst for me. Oh, I am going to go. I think I'm going to go back to my favorite episode from season one, and that's in basketball.
Yeah.
And I think it is just there. Again, he has so many moments in this episode where he's just on the cusp of just blatant racism.
Oh,
just absolute blatant, like, misogyny, just all these horrible, horrible moments that you're just like, how are you the manager of these places?
Secret weapon.
Secret weapon. And he is just being a braggart the entire time. And again, See, I think that he has some of his worst moments other than maybe Diversity Day, but for me, it's like worse than this because it's just constantly peppered throughout this episode.
Yeah. I would agree so much with that. Like the basketball, when he's going and every shot he misses, it's, I usually make those.
I usually make those.
You know what's wrong with me today?
And it's just like, he's a kid who said he was really good at something. Yeah. And then you see him. Yeah. Oh, it's awful. I so terrible.
That's an easy segue for me. So, because I'll go backwards. So my worst moment for season one, Michael, like my most cringeworthy is probably in basketball, where he decides to call the game shortly after learning that they were ahead because of a fake foul committed from nameless warehouse worker that's old.
100%.
And the fucking way that he says, I guess you guys are coming in Saturday. Oh my God. What a fucking prick.
He just needs to be punched.
He knew damn well that they were ahead at that moment in time, and he was waiting for his opportunity to be able to call the game and just pull this manager bullshit.
Yeah.
That he can just, okay, I guess you guys are coming in today, hoping he would get away with it. Hoping he would get away with it.
And then it's super shitty because then he backs off once confronted on it and just falls down and rolls over on like, we're going to come in. Of course, we're going to come in. No, I'm not going to make you guys come in.
Because he can't be hated. Yeah. And he's also
a dog.
in season one, he's a bully, like in a typical sense where like he will very easily back down if you stand up to him.
All bark. All bark.
Do I need to be liked? No, I don't have some compulsive need to be liked. I want to be liked. I like to be liked. I need to be liked.
I need.
All right, that's good. That's good.
No, I don't
favorite.
Have to be liked.
So, like, that's my least favorite moment. Probably my favorite moment of season one, Michael, is in episode one where he's doing the MTV Cribs walk around. And Dwight has got his stapler in Jell-O, and Dwight tries to get it out of the Jell-O, and Michael's like, no, you must eat it out. He's like, those are the rules.
Oh, that's a great call. He's new guy.
He's very, like, rambunctious and fun, but not in, like, a super shitty, inappropriate way. Like, he's just shenanigans Michael at that point.
Yeah, because it wasn't that bad of a prank, you know, and like Jim did it, and it's just like he just thought it was a fun, like, oh, we're just having fun in the office, you know, like, then, it was a little bit more realistic as far as
Ryan does his your biggest flan joke, and Michael does that like super aggressive chest shove where he's like, Nuga! Wham!
you should put him in custardy.
Yeah. I'm sorry, that was it. Jim's was the biggest flan.
That's always been your biggest flan.
New guy!
Checks him.
Wham! Yeah.
Those are good.
Oh my gosh. All right, BJ. Here
okay.
We go.
Least favorite moment. Like, can't even watch it. Season one is Diversity Day when he's talking to Kelly in the conference room.
Ugh. Oh,
and,
gosh.
You know, I don't even want to do the fake voice. No. I don't even want to do it. But we all know what we're talking about. And then he gets slapped.
If you need the reminder, go back to Diversity Day, season one, episode two.
Yep.
And I don't know the minutes, but it's right in the end when they all have the cards on their head. And that is what we're talking about. And he tries to give this example
of what he wanted to see because he wanted blatant, like, stereotypical racism for the races on everybody's head.
Right.
Yeah.
And no one was doing it because guess what? They're humans.
Kelly wasn't there. She had gone to take a customer meeting and
correct.
She came back
right.
in, like, while other people are just sort of fucking around and not really doing it half-hearted. Yeah. And then, like, she comes in. So she doesn't even know what's going on. And he just starts in with that.
Yeah.
You can't. And it's, I mean, that episode is great in its own right, but it's just, it just wouldn't.
It's a rough one.
It's a rough one on that side. So that is easily my least favorite Michael moment of season one. Can't watch it.
Yeah.
You know, and I think my favorite Michael moment is kind of like it's similar to AJ's where he kind of realizes maybe kind of you see a little bit of, you know, he understands that this is inappropriate, but it's when he's in the conference or he's in his office with Jan and Todd Packer calls. And and he puts it on speakerphone, and Todd starts saying super inappropriate things, and he has to cut him off, and he's like, yeah. Oh,
God.
Yeah. And
yeah, does like, the carpet match the drapes? Which, by the way, is not David Koetner.
Right.
No,
it is actually voiced by a different person. Which I think it was just a producer on the show.
I don't know who it was. They talk about it in another podcast where it was actually not him. Yes. That was recorded before he was cast.
Yeah.
And it's perfect. And it sounds like shockingly like him, though. It very really, close.
Oh, yeah, it does, which I think is somehow just amazing casting that you have to attribute that to.
Allison Jones.
There you go.
She's the patron saint of casting everything in The Office and so much more. She is amazing at her job.
Yeah.
Well, and that's so funny, too, because he starts it off with, hey, he's like, oh, Todd Packer. He goes, excellent sales rep. Do you mind if I take this? And then, like, puts it on speakerphone. He's like, Pac-Man, how you doing?
What
his Godzillery coming in?
He has Godzillery coming in today. Does the carpet match the drapes?
Does the carpet match the drapes?
Oh God! Yeah. Horrible person. So I like that scene because you kind of see that he understands inappropriate behavior.
Okay,
a little.
Fair enough. Like,
he somehow manages.
Great call. So, like, somehow he does realize that there is a line. It's just he's never crossed it in his own mind.
Yes. Well, he has, but yes.
In his own mind, he's, you know, he's somehow okay.
But you know that conversation would have gone just like that if Jan wasn't in the room.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And so, but that's where you know he's aware that it's not appropriate.
Great point.
But if Jan was in the room, he was in the office by himself, he picked up the phone, it was Todd Packer, it would have gone on the exact same way, but Michael would have been super into it because he wants Todd's respect and friendship more than anything.
Oh, my God.
And it would have just been terrible, but it would have just been the two of them and it would have been different.
Oh my gosh.
But, yeah.
I have a note on that same episode actually, and then that same moment of when he talks about not getting the memo or whatnot, and he just basically tries to put all the blame onto Pam.
Oh, yeah.
And he just says, he's like, so what's the deal, Pam? Why didn't you do your job?
Me
give me
no
the memo.
Get an
me
agenda.
No, get an no agenda. Get. it's like, well, I faxed it over to you today, and it's like, oh. It's like, and he just puts all the blame onto Pam.
Pam, terrible moment.
And terrible moment. And then she's like, but I love the redemption of that is she just says, you mean the agenda that you had me file away, that you filed away the special filing cabinet and it's in the wastebasket. And he's like, he doesn't have any way to get out of it.
That was a joke. It was actually my brother's and supposed to work for bills. And it doesn't really work with memos. So. But no, you're exactly right. Yeah.
So another great example of him passing the buck and not taking responsibility, like with Pam, right? And you're just like, we have to talk about healthcare because we have not talked about healthcare yet. Alliance isn't real Michael-centric, in my opinion, or at least to my recollection, but healthcare absolutely is him, first and foremost, passing the buck of picking a healthcare plan for his employees that is supposed to be worthwhile enough. Michael, you just have to pick a plan, and he passes this off to Dwight.
Yep.
The worst person he could pass this off to. He tries to give it to Jim, but he passes it to Dwight.
Yeah.
Whenever Michael gets me to do anything, I just tell him Dwight should do it.
Dwight should do it. It's just him trying to pass the buck so he can go and jerk around somewhere else.
Yeah, because he doesn't want to be the bad guy.
Yeah.
Well, he doesn't want to be the bad guy. He doesn't want any responsibility. Yeah. And it's also work.
Yep.
In season one, Michael does no work. I mean, any season, he does very little work. But
he tries to pass off to Jan that he wants to select. He's like, we're going to do the one with acupuncture and therapeutic massage.
The gold plan.
He does.
She's like, I'm not even on that plan.
So
well, you should get on it.
Here's a question for you guys. In healthcare, do you think that he's choosing that for the best interest of his employees? Because
he
wants to give them the best and he wants to be in this. Or is it he wants to do it for them in a selfish way?
So then he gets the recognition
of giving them the gold package.
Yeah.
Right.
Is it for him, or do you think just like he just wants it?
I think it's both things. Okay. I think he's doing it for both reasons.
He obviously like will just pick the best one, like period.
Yeah.
And it's like, and then everyone will think he's a hero because he doesn't understand the assignment from corporate is to cut costs.
Right.
And he's just like, well, I got this list. This is obviously the best one. I'm just going to choose this one.
Yeah.
And so, no, he definitely doesn't understand. Again, but
not
yeah,
getting the memo.
Just a very classic. That is, yeah, that is a very good episode as well. That one was written by Paul Lieberstein.
Oh, God, yep. Toby.
Toby.
Mr. Toby.
We'll talk about him next week.
Yes, we will. We will have a whole episode about Toby next week.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
That one aired in 2005. Man.
Yeah, because he's kind of a piece of shit in that episode, too, because is that the same episode where he is trying to come up with the surprise for the office?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
So, he's like teased them that he's got this big surprise at the end of the day and what it is, and then like just has no idea what it's going to be. He has no clue. He just knows that he wants to be the good guy.
Yep.
He wants to be the one who's always the life of the party and the person who's bringing the sunshine and rainbows. And so he's trying to put together this like extravagant bullshit of going to like a travel agency and he's asking them about... This I've heard about this thing in Atlantic City where like the casino, they send over a bus and they pick everybody up and you get to the casino and the rooms are comped and they hand you a big pile of chips and you just go crazy.
Yeah.
He's like, I haven't heard of anything like that. You could try calling the casinos. He's I have.
When he calls the mine or whatever.
Coal mine.
And that was the voice of
Creed Bratton.
Yeah. Yes. That's right.
And that
his
was
first speaking part.
That was his first speaking part. He got paid for a speaking role in that episode because of that. And he, that was totally Creed. And you can tell it's Creed, too.
Oh,
yeah.
It's even industrial coal elevator. It doesn't go very fast.
So what do you got down? What do you got for us when you get down there? Like laser tag?
This is where his mind goes. This is where his mind just explores to different places. It's just like, well, there's got to be more to it. Yeah. It's like he's such a child. Like, and I think that is most of the character development that happened with first season Michael is picture yourself. It's like, hey, Steve, you're a kid, but you're also in charge of people. Yep. Yeah. That's it.
You're an immature asshat who doesn't like to do his job.
Yeah.
But you're in charge of everyone, and there's nothing they can do about it.
Right.
Yeah.
And again, spending all this time, instead of just approaching it and being done with this whole thing in like 45 minutes, right? He decides to then spend an entire day, like you said, just trying to figure out a surprise.
Locked in his office. Lines closed. Yeah. And just so busy in here. Oh, I got another call.
No, you don't.
Still
no one calling.
I got to make a call. And then he comes back at the end of the episode with, or not even the end, but he comes back with ice cream sandwiches.
He's just winging them at people.
Yeah, and I love that like Ryan's like only one of his only parts is it the one with the cookies or the brown? Just eat it.
He's like, here, actually take two because you don't get healthcare.
This isn't our surprise, is it? Because it's been a pretty awful day. No, it's not the surprise. It is a surprise.
It's a pretty nice one, by the way.
I love the shot of him through the blinds sitting there with like 15 wrappers throw ice cream. Yeah. He's just got ice cream on his fucking face. He's got chocolate all around his mouth.
He's just trying to think his way through.
He's rolling this fucking Dunder Mifflin like die-cast semi-toy truck back and forth on his calendar.
Oh, God. I do want to touch on the Alliance a little bit because, again, it's just coming back to how can Michael... be the center of attention. The extent that he goes to trying to appear as a hero, it's no one's birthday, apparently.
Yeah. Yep.
No one's birthday. However, who's the next birthday? Well, next month it's Meredith. Okay, great. We'll throw a surprise birthday for Meredith. Of course it's going to be a surprise. Just so he can write something in a card.
Yeah.
And
because he's trying to get everybody's mind off of
downsizing. And so,
then still fucking references it in the birthday card.
Yeah.
By trying to take everyone's mind off of downsizing, he references downsizing and what he was trying to do to take everyone's mind off of it.
And then he does that super awkward, like, Because of the downsizing. He does like the apparently. Hopefully no, he
didn't
the only
get,
the
you didn't
only
get the joke.
Downsizing that happens is your age or something like
that. Yeah, yeah.
And there's just this hush that falls across there. He's like, because of the downsize. It's like, no, we get it.
No, we get it.
I love when he pulls Dwight in and he's like, I need some information on Meredith. And he's like, oh, Meredith works in accounting, multiple Dundies. Just names all super work stuff that Michael already
very
knows.
Very relevant things about him. Like, and but still, he's just like, no.
Yep, and yeah, the whole perfect in that episode, like, Michael Scott being a selfish piece of shit is what kind of cake to get. And he chooses mint chocolate chip for Meredith, who can't even eat mint chocolate chip
intolerant
because she can't eat dairy.
She's lactose intolerant. Well, everybody
else will enjoy
and then
it.
While eating her birthday cake in front of her, he has the audacity to say, ugh, if I was allergic to dairy, I'd just kill myself.
Can I change mine? Can I change my worst Michael moment to that? Oh man, if I couldn't eat dairy, I'd kill myself.
That is Michael Scott season one, right there in a nutshell.
In a nutshell, man. Yes. That is a cap off. That's it. Ladies and gentlemen, that's it. And Michael Scott, again, worst person in TV is Michael Scott season one.
The hair.
That's it. Good.
The racism.
The racism.
Poorly fitting shirts and ties. The Walmart George shirt and tie box special for $5 that doesn't fit anybody well is just his daily attire.
Whatever that and one he just picked up at Walmart set up for that he got for basketball.
He's got the fucking like knee brace sleeve too. He's doing all his stretches. He's flinging the fucking arms around.
Oh my gosh.
I love the under the basket shot of him trying to do the dunks, and then it just cuts to a wide shot of Lonnie like ka-chunk putting the fucking hoop back 6 feet up.
Oh my lord.
Also, while we're on basketball real quick,
yeah.
Last episode I said that they never mention Dwight's face guard.
Okay.
In the deleted scenes in the extended version, they did bring it up. And Dwight's reason for the crazy face guard is, I've almost had my nose broken 1,000 times. Almost.
Almost had my nose broken 1,000 times.
Fantastic. I love that.
So, in the deleted scenes, they did bring it up. Also, did make the wild shot, but it was not the one they had on camera.
I see.
It's a correction there. So, he did make the wild shot. It is in the, it's what you would call the tag at the end of every episode. They added that as a different tag. And the extended version. Yeah. So, while I was wrong, I was right.
Well, after episode one, we got so many people calling us out. Yes. Like
upset with you. If you think we said something wrong, or if you have a different opinion, that's what we're here. Because guess what? We're not Office experts, right? We are three Office super fans.
Super fans and, who continue to watch The Office.
And we are drinking while we talk about this stuff. So, we might say something wrong.
You never know.
You don't know.
You don't know, guys.
We might record three or four. We might be hammered by the end of this night.
Yeah. You have no idea. I hope we're coherent by the end of the next episode.
Episode six is going to be freestyled nonsense.
And that's what you'll continue to get as long as you keep tuning in to Scotch and Swunday, guys.
Yeah.
Make sure if you are continuing to listen to the podcast that you are still rating and reviewing us on whatever podcast platform that you're listening on. You got that 5 stars, smash that 5 stars. Make sure you're writing a review. And while you write your review, make sure you are leaving us your fan theory, guys.
Next week, we're going to be talking about all things Toby. Whereas this episode, we talked about just season one, Michael. We're going to be talking about full series Toby next week. So we're going to do everything from the beginning to the end to his time at the Scranton Strangler trial, everything. Yeah. Mm. So, in the meantime, if you have any opinions, any fan theories of your own, anything you want to shout out to us, you can hit us up on our social media. Why don't you tell them where they can find us, AJ?
All right, guys. So make sure if you want to find us anywhere on that social media, Twitter, TikTok, Facebook, Instagram, it's at Scotch Splenda. That's just at Scotch Splenda. No and, no ampersand, at Scotch Splenda. And if you'd rather email us for your fan theories, Make sure you shoot it on over to scotchandsplendapodcast@gmail.com. All spelled out, scotchandsplendapodcast@gmail.com.
And if you want to follow us on any social media platforms, you can find me, BJ, at I Am The Beej. That's Beej, B-E-E-J, on Instagram and TikTok. Nick, where can we find you?
Yeah,
you can find me just about everywhere at Nick Morella. That's N-I-C-K-M-E-R-U-L-L-A. You'll find that on Facebook, Twitter, Twitch, on Instagram. You can find me at Morella Nick, M-E-R-U-L-L-A-N-I-C-K, because that bastard Nick Morella in New Jersey who follows me on Twitter took that one.
And you can find me just about anywhere on social media, guys. A-J-A-Y-V-E-N-S. It's AJ Venz. Anywhere on social media, just plug it in and find me.
Cool.
All right, guys. Well, thank you guys so much again for joining us for Scotch and Splenda. I guess until next time, we'll catch you on the flippity flip.
On the flippity flip.
On the flippity flip.
Bye. Bye.